The following content is provided under a Creative Commons license. Your support will help MIT OpenCourseWare continue to offer high-quality educational resources for free. To make a donation or view additional materials from hundreds of MIT courses, visit MIT OpenCourseWare at ocw.mit.edu.
Let's do a bit of a discussion. We've got about 20 minutes. So these are the games that we just played. And I just want to have a discussion again. What are the mechanics in these games? We've been talking specific. I've gone to a lot of teams to ask about core mechanics because that's really the thing that you're going to have to worry about for assignment one. But let's talk a little bit about mechanics in general. Again, the definition that I want you to work with, at least for assignment one, is a set of rules, could be more than one, usually more than one, that is going to allow a player to change game state. Now, I never defined game state, but anyone want to like throw out how you would interpret game state?
It's like all the public and private information on the board right now.
Okay, all right, that's all the information, whether you know it or not, you know, that could be a game.
Yeah, for me it's like affecting other players,
Yeah. It's like all the information. Oh, what affecting other players?
The play they have available to them, or
Like the decisions are available to.
Sure.
To them could be one way to interpret it. Okay, all right. I thought I saw it on the hand. Yeah.
I was thinking I don't know how to explain it, but I guess if you're having a board or whatever type of medium that you have, it should change.
Right.
Like go from something should move or. If something doesn't move, then there should be a reason why it didn't move.
Okay, so one way that I interpret that is that it has to be a variable. It has to be something that isn't necessarily the same every single turn, right? You know, it's like the board of the Monopoly, the layout of a Monopoly board is not what I would describe as being something part of the game state, because that never changes from turn to turn.
So if you were to take someone elsewhere, say across the country, some group of people of the same size as the group that's playing their game, and to have each one of you send one telegram to one of them, it's the minimum amount you need, the minimum stuff you need to tell them in order for them to be able to continue your game from where you were.
Okay, so you've got a kind of evaluation criteria whether you've you've just fully described the game state, you know. All of these are useful ways of thinking about what is the game state. What's the stuff that can change, and what's all the information, you know, whether you know it, whether an individual player knows it or not, to be able to reproduce the state, to be able to reproduce a game in progress and then be able to carry on, right? Sometimes things are irreproducible, sports, for instance. If you try to halt a game halfway and then reproduce exactly the same weather conditions as the game was when it was halted, it's kind of difficult. But you know that if you really, really wanted to be able to continue that, you have to make a decision on whether the weather is part of the game state. Or maybe, in sports, often it's the reason why the game was interrupted in the first place.
Do you think, at least in sports, fatigue is part of the game state?
Yeah, I think so. Which makes it kind of difficult, right? It's like we're going to stop the game at halftime and then we'll pick this game up tomorrow playing the second half. And it's like that's a very different game from the typical game.
Instead, make it so that they have to start a different game, right, for the first half.
First, exhaust yourself, but we'll throw those results out. Then you start to
start. Oh. Do something else with them. Make it harder.
Well, I mean, and that's the problem. It's like if you actually had, and this does happen in sort of not marathons, but multi-day races. You have the situation where people get a good night's sleep before they resume the second leg of the race, and at which point they've decided that, fatigue is not the thing that they're going for, but they've tried they quantify your advantage or your disadvantage based on your start time the next day or something like that, right? I'm trying to think of a competition that says that. Does Tour de France do that? I think. I think the Tour de France is not one day, right? It's multiple days. Yeah, so you have to stop, you have to sleep, you have to wake up, and then depending on when you reached the checkpoint determines when you get to leave the checkpoint.
In like, I don't know, in cricket, they're like, they have sometimes multiple day competitions. And like near the end of the one day, it could be like dark, but the game isn't yet taught, like the game isn't yet finished for the day. And they'll put in like, and they'll like specifically put in, the teams will like start executing strategies, basically trying to delay until the next day starts there.
So that there are rules to sort of counteract these sort of like exploitative strategies.
Until the game ends for the day, basically.
I mean, it's weird because you have these emergency strategies, and then there are probably rules that will come up to prevent some of the worst strategies from being put into play. You've got that same thing in baseball. Sometimes you put in, you know, these that there are late inning pitches, right? That you will and there are your starters, and they're trying to achieve completely different things. So we've talked a little bit about game state, and we've played all of these games, or at least all of you played a good portion of them. And I have gone to team to try to talk a little bit about the mechanics. So let's just pick one that that not that many people played, so we can talk a little bit about it. Did a lot of people, I think like Blockus was played once today, so by this group, right? So game state is characterized by and the location of pieces on this grid board, but there is, I think every player has the same set of pieces, just in a different color, and which pieces have already been played, which, you know, so it's not just the location, but also which pieces have been played, and which means which pieces are still available to them. Whose turn it is, of course, is, you know, part of the game state. Because you take turns placing pieces, right? So what's the core mechanic of Blockus? You select a piece from all of the pieces you haven't placed yet, and then you figure out where it goes. And the rule that you have to fit to meet before you put it down. A corner of one of your own pieces, right?
Right.
So you can't have two pieces butting up like that, but you can't have two corners touching each other, and you have to have corners.
Right. And it doesn't matter where the opponent's pieces are on the board, except you can't put them.
You're trying to find a legal space to place, which an open space that your piece will actually fit out of all of the pieces that you've got, which is part of the game state. And of course, that changes game state by not only changing what pieces are on the board, as we described earlier, but also takes away a piece that you've already got. That's the core mechanic. In, I think, the next class, let me just take a look at the syllabus again. It's going to be like February 19th. No, it's going to be, holy cow. It's going to be like a month before we get to chapter 2 of this book. Seriously? Okay, just for your sanity, you might just want to read chapter 2 of Challenges for Game Designers, because it's like 5 pages. It's not much. These are pages with illustrations on them. They go fast. Chapter 2 goes into a lot of more specific definitions. But they also talk about something called core dynamic, which is something I actually don't necessarily want you to worry too much about right now. They are right in identifying that often the core dynamic is actually more important than the core mechanic of a game. So the core dynamic probably has a bigger influence on what a player is going to experience, whether it's kind of some sort of like crazy frenetic game where you're trying to screw over your opponent. Or when it's like animal versus animal upon animal, where it almost feels like a cooperative game at times, even though there's a winner, you're all kind of playing together to not tip the whole thing over. Those things often come out of the dynamics. We'll go into the theory. Some of you have already encountered this in another class system, the mechanics, dynamics, aesthetics theory. We'll get into that later into this semester, and that's just a very convoluted way of explaining why sometimes game design is hard. But the mechanic is the thing that you get to control as a designer. It's you get to write the rules. You get to decide what collection of rules that the players have to go through in order to be able to change the state of the game. And I want you to go through in deep, deep permutations on what you can possibly do with one core mechanic. So in Escape, it's very clearly Rainier Gnesia, he's a noted game designer. In fact, there's a little bio of him in chapter one, I think. In chapter, there's a little photo of him, the guy who designed that game. And it's very clearly him like, trying to do everything that he can do with dice in a short design period of time. And when you see his other games later this semester, you will see that he's trying to do everything that he can do with auctions. He's trying to do everything that he can do with this, and he's thinking about these game mechanics. And that's what I want. That's the thought process I want you to go through. All right. So leaves us with just a little bit more time. I'm going to end this with like the stupidest question in the world, which is, what is a game? What is a game? We've gotten 3 hours into class and we haven't actually talked about this yet. Maybe I'll take a step back. Why is it a stupid question?
It's not a stupid question.
Is it?
It's a question.
Why did I describe it as a stupid question? Maybe that might be.
Because it feels kind of intuitive, like, oh, I can look at something and say, this is a game, this is not a game. But to actually like describe, maybe there's like some edge cases where it gets really difficult. And then to actually define what is and what isn't gets really murky.
That is definitely true. But you have a counterpoint.
Game. It's like usually something with a set goal in mind, given.
You've got like objective and rules.
Objectives, rules, objectives or sub-objectives, goals,
yeah.
as you describe them. Some sort of constraints, some.
Yeah, like a mechanical constraint, like an objective and a mechanical way, like a way to get the restraint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I consider this a stupid question because it is. Like, everybody knows what a game is. That's a ridiculous thing to say. Like, of course I know what a game is. But when we actually look at it, then it does. It gets hard. It gets complicated, like you're saying.
Yeah,
that's why it's such a dumb question.
Again, so many edge cases. But there are these things that a lot of games do share. These goals that you're working towards, these constraints that you're trying to work in, these decisions you're trying to make. Yeah.
There are definitely things that have felt games which have had like set objectives in them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it with no set objectives, and it's hard to say like. And the design situation where they're like the way that the procedure is there, but like I don't think a game necessarily has to have critical.
It's quite easy to think of a game that people might recognize as a game that doesn't meet all of these criteria.
So I think of it as something with a goal, an entertaining goal, so basically a goal that would be entertaining to obtain. But I also think that it's very dependent on what you think of as a game, and someone mentioned that, like, oh, it's obvious. If you look at a game, you can just be like, this is a game, it's not. But I think that it's not as obvious. I think with, you know, animal upon animal, every one of us can look at that and say it's a game. But there are a lot of things that kind of fall on the edge.
Yeah.
Some people will define them as games, but other people won't.
Or my dad's really angry at me. I have to pick up all these cards.
So I personally like the definition of unnecessary obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's this play space that you don't have to be in it, but you choose to be in it, and you choose to give yourself these obstacles to like, you know, see if you can get over them or whatever.
I think that's Bernard Suits who posits that, and he likes to use golf as an example, right? You know, it's like because clearly golf is an inefficient way of delivering a ball into a cup. So it's like, yes, let's just use this very long stick, and you know that's weighted weirdly, and then you know put the ball really far away, and give you a rule that you can't just pick it up and drop it in there. unnecessary obstacle is kind of a nice way to describe a criteria that a game could meet.
So it's interesting because like the
like oftentimes a lot of people, like the creative people, like, you know, artists and other such things will say like constraints actually let you be more creative.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I think, what's interesting about games is like specifically with like strategies and stuff, like
mm-hmm.
the fact that you can't just pick up the golf ball and walk to the hole and put it in, like, means you actually have to learn, like, well, this golf club is good for like long distances and, you know, this and that and that. So like all these constraints kind of yield different strategies, which is really interesting to study.
Right, and then even in the example of the cricket thing, right, it's
mm-hmm.
like you have like this weird collection set of rules leads to this emergent strategy, which
yeah.
is like, and now we put in this particular kind of batter or pitcher that is going to help us maximize our, what's going to extend this game by a day. Did you have your hand up?
No.
Okay. So which is why it's not an entirely futile experiment to try to define games. In fact, I believe we do have a definition of games coming up in one of the rules of play readings, and it is one that is functional. You know, it has goals, it has the constraints that you're working in. It's, I believe they also have it describing an activity that's actually carved out of sort of of regular life, and the consequences that happen inside it don't necessarily matter outside it. But as many people have already pointed out in class, if I gave you a little bit of time, you will be able to come up with a game that people will recognize as a game and falls outside of the definition. The reason why I personally, this is not going to be useful to you outside of this class. So I'm going to tell you personally, the reason why I don't like the question, what is a game, is because it invites you to carve things out of the game space. You say like, that thing is not a game because it doesn't meet this definition. And I find that activity to be pointless, to just telling people who've made something and have decided to call it a game that is not, that thing that you created is not a game. I actually feel that it's a very antisocial, very non-inclusive way of thinking about what could actually be useful in thinking about games. But for your own benefit of working in a team, it is reasonable to set goals that you want to hit with your game. You know, many of the descriptions that have already come up in the past 10 minutes are actually things I would use to describe good games, but not necessarily games as a whole. You know, entertaining, for instance. It's like, how many of you can think of a game that's not entertaining, but it's a game?
Monopoly.
Sure. But,
the game.
What else?
War.
Golf. It depends on you, right? It depends on the player. Actually, a lot depends on the player. You can come up with the worst game in the world. Conversely, you can come up with the worst game in the world and find people who won't enjoy it. And you can make a game that's trying to deliver a particular message and people are going to walk away with completely the wrong interpretation of it. And that's fine because there are players, I'll say it's not even a completely wrong interpretation. They come up with a valid interpretation that they walked away with it, and you have very little control over that. But it's okay because the game's more about players usually than about the designers. Even though you see the designers' names on many of these boxes, although Blockers doesn't have that, I think. In the end, there are relatively few famous game designers out there, but there are many, many famous game players out there, and I think there's a good reason for that. All the creativity that comes out from constraints, all the, you know, if you're talking about sports, the athleticism, the ability to work within these constraints to do something that people didn't necessarily think that was possible, you know, is usually the hallmark of a great player. And the designers just provided them the sandbox for them to be able to express that, right? So I think it's when you come back on Monday, you know, to be able to come in with a concept after taking a look at some of the readings of this is what I want to hit, right? You know, I want to have a game that that has a goal, or I want to have a game where the players have a goal. I want to have a game where the players are going to express a certain amount of creativity, or whether they're really just sort of like mechanically going through the possibility space. I think we've got a couple of games that actually were very mechanical. And just like you're just stepping through the paces. Seven Code 777 is almost a little bit like that, right? Because you don't get to decide what question to ask, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just draw the question.
Yeah, you just draw it. You ask the question, you get the information, and at some point of time, you get all the information you need. So, that's a game that has very relatively little decision making on the player's part if you're playing optimally. If you're not playing optimally, then actually you're making a whole bunch of incorrect decisions that actually makes it a little bit more variable in who's going to win, and that's why the game's actually interesting. Come in on Monday being willing to discuss that. Come in on Monday being willing to change your mind when you actually meet up with your team. We're going to do a little bit of brainstorming on Monday on what sort of games that you want to work on, and more importantly, what mechanics you want to work on. One more clarification about the first assignment. It is not about the story of your game or the fiction of your game or where your game is set in ancient history or in the science, sci-fi or anything like that. We'll get to that later on in this semester. I want you to think about what are the rules that the player needs to deal with. Right? You are your own target audience for assignment. That's it for class today. Thank you very much. Please make sure that you did sign in. If you haven't gotten the attendance sheet, please make sure you're on it.
Oh,